First, actually, thank Dan and Tom for invitation. And Dan and I had a breakfast back in New York almost like in April, May, when he talked about this idea to come here to give a talk. So my message to him is say, let's wait for another 4 or 5 months until market becomes calm. So the market has never become calm. Then I got email from Tom, I said, Tom, can I respond to you in another one week, finally Tom said, I have to talk with you. So I talked with Tom. Tom convinced me, say, David, I don't think this the stress will disappear very quickly. Maybe if you come here, when you go back here, the world will become better. So anyway, so here I am. And I get rid of all my affiliation for my talk, and this has become a very sensitive topic in Wall Street, probably also for the rest of the world, how to give a fair value about synthetic ABS and CDOs. So our company policy is strictly I cannot talk with any media. So every time when something bad happens, I get a lot of call from newspaper, magazines, and asking for comments. And I'm basically referring every of those requests to our compliance office. And the compliance office always come back say no. So in the truth of this talk, totally as private talk, that's why there's no boxes or logo in any place at all. So any comments I make here, just totally take that as my personal comment. This is the talk and the title of my talk, and what I'm going to do today is just going to give you some background about this whole mortgage subprime market, and there are quite some securities associated with it. And first, I'm going to talk about and give you some of the data. You can see how bad it is, the current ABX, and the topics market. Then, I think here we talk about a really modern issue, and I don't think I have completely solved this problem. I'm going to, present you more problem and the difficulties we are, having, about assessing, this risk, and give you some idea how, you could, quote by quote, take some of the scientific approach to this complicated problems. So what I feel the fundamental two driving factors in mortgage modeling are in a prepay and in a default. And unfortunately or fortunately, both of them are a co here. So that's the one. The next thing, I presented something called a competing risk model and a more like a static aspect. Why it's called a competing risk model? Because here, every mortgage is subjected to termination by two forces, either in a prepaid or defaulted. That's why it's called a competing risk model. The next one is called more like a dynamic model. Why do you need a dynamic model? And a lot of people attach my name with Gaussian copula and also static model. I think here I'm not going to talk about anything about the copula at all. And in this world, you do need a dynamic model. Dynamic in the sense, for example, everything is driven by house and price and appreciation, right? So that one changes from 1 month to another month. And also, all these prepaid defaults are also driven by interest rate environment. And that one also changes from one period to another period. And then I talk about a little bit about the Cox regression model with gum structure. And this is more like a survival type of regression model. And the GUM is just like a function form. In a lot of cases, we don't know how, covariates, impact your, dependent variables such as prepare or default. So GUM is called a generalized additive model. Actually, this is a terminology, come up by also a professor here at the University of Toronto, Bob Tipshirani. And this is more like on the empirical side. I think people have been doing this kind of empirical study to study mainly prepayment to a less extent of default for the last almost 15 years. And finally, I'm going to just talk very briefly how do you come up with a dynamic model and also you try to calibrate it to market. And maybe because of work relation, I'm just trying to give you some ideas. There are not too much details here. So, but I'm happy to answer any like, you know, technical questions. All right. So I don't claim myself as a mortgage, you know, expert. You know, I don't have any mortgage experience at all. You know, until probably like almost like 3 years ago, I was taking care, you know, a little bit of part of a mortgage, you know, such as in a field called a synthetic, ABS. And I remember, you know, at the early days when I was discussing with the traders, and the trader, you know, basically, like we talk about, you know, how to model default, you know, the message I got from people say, you know, ABS doesn't default. So I say, if it doesn't default, why do investors pay you so much in a spread? And this is like a very interesting problem. I think, you know, in order to understand a problem, we have to understand the whole picture of the whole issues. Here, I'm just trying to give you a little bit about the whole mortgage process. And especially in the U.S., the mortgage market is very well developed market. Here, I'm just telling you what are those people involved in the whole process. All right? The first, you know, one is, of course, like the borrowers. And the people, you know, borrow money from the bank, you know, for a different purpose. Most of us borrow money to buy a house to live, right? But there are many other people who are, you know, actually, you know, buy a house, you know, as an investment. And some people, like you can say, you know, more like as a, you know, speculation, right? This happens very much in like some like you know, rapidly house appreciating, you know, market such as Las Vegas or Florida, right? And also in U.S., you know, there's also, you know, sometimes, you know, when house, you know, appreciates a lot, people feel they are so rich, right? But in the daily, they don't have enough money to spend. They actually go to bank to borrow money, use a house as a collateral. This is something called a home equity loan. So they borrow money for different purpose, going out for vacation or, you know, getting a repairment of a house, you know, etc. So those are kind of the different, you know, borrowers, right? So, and I'm going to make a little comment about each of those like players in the market. And when something bad happens, very often people like to point the finger, you know, to each other. And what I'm going to say, almost like, you know, everyone's guilty here. So, and then you just talk about, you know, why do you say borrowers are, you know, some of them are guilty. And you probably, like, you know, read a lot of articles in Wall Street Journal. For example, in a couple of months, you know, almost 4 months ago, they talked about one family in California. Their combined, you know, income is $90,000. In U.S., it's not a bad income, right? But this family actually bought a house, you know, with $600,000 in a mortgage. And the mortgage is borrowed in such a way, you know, it was given, you know, by a teaser rate. The teaser rate only works for the first, like, you know, 1, 2, or 3 years, which is very low. And sometimes they also borrow the house by, you know, paying interest only. So you can definitely afford it. And, you know, great family, typical American family, you know, and husband and wife, you know, both of them work. They have two, you know, daughters in the high school. But now, you know, after 2 or 3 years, you know, the mortgage, you know, rate is to be reset. And when it's to be reset, it's associated with, you know, LIBOR, and also the margin, we call the spread, is pretty high. Suddenly, after reset, he cannot afford a house, right? So these are kind of like a, you know, typical example. And who should blame? You know, in the first place, this, you know, family should not borrow that much money, right? They should borrow much cheap house, or, you know, try to, you know, rent instead of, you know, buying house. So this is like the first category. And the second category is called originator or broker. And in the U.S., it's very interesting. Like, you know, every evening, like for one period of time, like I would get like 2 or 3 calls for people. The first person has asked you, said, do you have a mortgage? You know, I'd like to give you an offer. I can know you payment by this much, blah, blah, like that. And there's like a mortgage brokers, they always try to, you know, tell you some, you know, good deals, and quote by quote. But many times, like, you know, based on my assessment, all those deals are a lot less good. And a lot of, you know, brokers, they made tons of money by themselves, but they don't necessarily create a good solution for their customers. And some people call them more like the predatory brokers. So those are kind of like the more second category of people in this whole process. Then, there's something called ABS, asset backed security, right? So you probably say like the mortgage lender, it's not like the traditional mortgage lender. They basically, take money from depositors, they lend the money out, they make profit by taking the difference. This is probably the main business. The traditional commercial banking is the same situation still in China today, but in the U.S., that's not the case. Most time the people, lend the money, they have a mortgage, immediately they sell a mortgage to a U.S. banker, right? They sell it, and they become like a servicer by charging like 25 to 50 basis points. And U.S. bank, take it, then they put them together, assemble, say, 5,000 to 8,000 individual loans, then, securitize them, cut them into pieces, then, try to sell to investors globally, and especially in Europe, Asia, even some like remote, places, you never imagine, and over there. So that's more like a second layer. Then people always come with a good idea. This is called innovation, and they can put a lot of mortgage bonds, which are already securitized. Put them together, creating another securitized product called CDOs. All right. So, and it's rating agency. We're often giving away a good rating. Rating agency, typical 9 of defense is say, okay, we rate based on historical data. Last probably 10 years is probably best in history, in the housing appreciation perspective. So, and that's why there's no default if you look like immediate data, and the rating agencies, we are doing a good job. The market become very bad, and they always take some belated reaction to it. And also, you're not sure who does the rating agency work for. Very often when I give a talk, I ask people the question, who does the rating agency work for? And in U.S., if you look at rating agency history, rating agency started after the Depression. So their main objective is to try to help investors. But here, rating agencies take money from us, investment banking, and if you look at all rating agency balance sheet, 70% of their income comes from rating structured finance deals. And also, there are not only one rating agency. There are, mainly three or domestic kind of four of them. There's limited competition. If I come with a structure, I talk with Moody's. If Moody doesn't rate it, I can talk with the S&P's. And very often, to a certain extent, a rating agency, and many times it could get hijacked by, all requests from investment bank. And their rating methodology, and that's another issue. And I deal with rating agency almost 10 years ago. And when rating agency come up with some methodology called binomial expansion. And their basic idea say, I don't know how to model, corporate bond, 100 bonds that are correlated. What I can do is to find a small subset and which can, match the original 100 correlated one by matching the first two moments. And it's very interesting. If you pick up a typical example, say you have 100 bonds, based on diversification, you get an independent number of bonds, say 63. Suppose it's BAA1, 5-year default probability is 1.35%. So everyone here has a strong math background. You have binomial expansion, N equals 63, probability P equals 1.35, and you try to calculate the probability of no one default, one default, and two defaults to see what you get. What you get is, no default, huge probability, one default, still significant, two defaults, still meaningful. Any number of defaults more than three, including three, is practically zero. So we pay $150,000 to get a CDO rated. And all rating agency does is to say, I use 3-point distribution to approximate the whole loss distribution. All right, so you see, that's a great model. And that model probably brought the rating agency like $1 billion of the income altogether. So that's essentially that's how it works. And from CPO desk perspective, why do I need to worry here? Like I buy, you know, the loans from all mortgage lenders, I put them together, slice dice them, sell to investors, and it's not my problem. By selling that, you know, I get like a structuring fee, and sometimes I take some stake on it. Usually I take like a senior tranche, and which is the same piece, and so I could, you know, from an investment bank perspective, I could make a lot of money too. So then you're left with like the CDO investors and a lot of like they are including like some more than 9 insurers. You know, I used to, you know, to do sales side research. Part of my job is to go out and talk with investors globally. And I can fairly say, you know, among the, you know, probably like 300 investors I have met with, you know, I don't know how many of them really understand what they are buying. So if you look at this list of the whole process, so you basically, you know, sit here and say, like, who should, you know, be blamed? I can basically say, you know, almost like everyone here should be all blamed. And the question, like, just say, how do I get this problem, like, solved now? So the problem becomes so huge, it's a mess, and it involves, you know, so many people, involving, you know, many, you know, different, like, you know, economic interests, you know, it become a big problem. And now let me talk about a little bit about the product side. You know, in practice, you know, I'm dealing with products, I'm dealing with securities. That's where I, you know, focus on it. And all other problem, we leave it to, you know, senior people, politicians, you know, try to handle those issues. So here I'm just trying to give you like a concrete how we call all those names so that we can use the same, you know, terminology. You also understand what I'm talking about. And loan is just like individual mortgage loan. And, you know, loan 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, usually we take like a 5,000 to sometimes, you know, 10,000 loans, put them together, it's a loan portfolio. And then we start, you know, tranching them, you know, take one piece of it. And this is something called ABS bond. And what are those ABS bond? It's very interesting. Like if you look at like a BBB and a BBB minus, which usually has, you know, credit enhancement to about 4 or 5%. How thickness of that bond? The average thickness is like a 1%. So in the corporate world, we call those kind of tranches, you know, thin tranches. So what does it mean, like thin tranches? So suppose that you take like a risk, which is very well behaved, you know, bell shape, you know, normal, and then you take like a very small piece of it. And so how do you value a risk like that? And also sometimes people ask to say, wow, you know, I got so many loans, like, you know, maybe like I'm pretty safe. But in reality, if the underlying fundamental, you know, is bad, that's 1% thickness. If you say once you have a loss of a trunk, your trunk basically, you know, would be wiped out completely. All right? So that's the case probably for most of the BBB or BBB minus banks with underlying subprime, you know, mortgages. All right? So sometimes the people say, I'm taking a bunch of like a subprime, you know, mortgage, BBB, BBB minus. I could create like a AAA security. But people keep asking the question, say, AAA, you know, doesn't default. Right, so I pay you like a, you know, 20 or 30 basis points. How could a AAA, you know, default? AAA security of like a mezzanine ABS bond are not, you know, safe at all. And that's why, you know, you can see the price could drop like within one day, you know, by, you know, $15. So that's like that's very much like a lesson there. Then, you know, we take like say, you know, 20 bonds, and, you know, we create another index called ABX. All right. And then we take like 2 series, and then we create another tranche on top of that. That's something called a PADEX. Or like, you know, if you take like an underlying bond, you know, not from the ABX, but from any other pool, this is, you know, what we call the bespoke ABS and CDOs. Alright? Those are kind of like, you know, instruments we talk about here. But let's ask like, what we are trading, you know, today. And loan, subprime loan, and usually, you know, lenders basically, you know, underwriting the mortgage, then immediately try to sell to the investment bank for securitization purpose. And when market was pretty, you know, good, and you can sell like a mortgage, you know, by like say 101, 102, 103. And when it becomes so good, investment bank want to even like control the source of the loans. So many like investment bank in, you know, bought the mortgage company, and just before the market had come down. And the Merrill Lynch, you know, bought the Franklin, and we bought like a couple of them too. And so you can see like you know very interesting, like from incentive perspective, it doesn't make too much sense. So, and if you look like say take a subprime mortgage today, and you say how much loss do you have? This problem is very easy to answer. You go to like any like U.S. area to talk with a servicer, so you might not have like say 1,000 subprime mortgage. So how much loss you could have? People probably say I would probably lose like 20% of them, right? So that's a very well, like, you know, fair assessment, easy to assess. Because mortgage is relatively simple in a product. And, but once you create like a, you know, ABS bond, like it's hard to say. So I got a portfolio, say my total loss is 20%. But when I, you know, slice past them, suddenly, like, should the total loss from ABS bond be the same as the loss from the loan portfolio? Right? So there's no, this is like a more like a basic like a, you know, energy preservation, right? So you don't create anything like of lasting, or there's nothing leakage here. But then suddenly if you ask all the bondholders today, say how much money you lose, you collect all the numbers, people will say like, I lost like $10 together. So from mortgage perspective, you lose like say $30. There's no argument with each other or legal argument. But when like suddenly you start passing into ABS bonds, and all the bondholders told you collectively they have lost only $10. Where did another $20 go? Right. So that's where, like, that's why, you know, you read the newspaper, you know, every day, people just say, what a second. I can't imagine, like, you know, you cannot value those, you know, bonds. Those bonds are a lot of very much liquidly traded. Like the liquid name of ABS bonds are less than 100 in US. We trade them. All right. So next one is called ABX. ABX is essentially just a portfolio. Somehow ABX has quite some liquidity there. The people buy, the people in the selling. A lot of people take a macro hedge, you can buy and sell. For a moment, that is the only price we observe every day. Alright, we don't observe, you know, any, you know, other, you know, price too much. And especially on the distressed case, we don't observe too much like ABX bond price either. Alright, so that's the thing that the topics of the moment is basically low trading at all. It's too complicated. It's to the same story, just like no one can put like a price, you know, on the ABS and the CDO. So that's the thing of what's the current in the market situation. Here basically give you, show you, you know, ABX in a single A, you know, bond. You know, I should have shown you, you know, in price term. Here I'm just take some liberty to translate the price into like a spread. You can see at the beginning, like a single A, you know, spread like 35 bips. And on the course of like now, it goes from 35 to 3,035. So this is kind of like a, you know, change you can see. It's almost like a one line up, but somehow, you know, we got some like exuberance, you know, in September where stock market has come down, but actually it's not. That's probably, you know, just a reflection of the market a lot like, you know, shorter, who try to, you know, cover their, you know, profit, all right? So that's essentially what you see. So what drives this? I think it's a fundamental which drives this. And in the U.S., you can, you know, probably say U.S. housing market is in recession, all right? If you look at, like, you know, latest, like, statistics such as, you know, Shiller, you know, index, and nationally, the index has been, like, decreasing by, you know, 4%, you know, just, like, for first, you know, 9 months. And the U.S. housing market is in recession, all right? So that's the essential fundamental driving factor here. This level for single A, if you look at like some other ones, you see similar in the pattern, you know, triple B, and it's spread is tremendous high. And then you see like in a triple B minus, it's even further. So essentially, all those like in a triple B minus bonds, by expectation from today, they are going to lose all their principal. And what's left with is just like, you know, something we call like interest rate, you know, only, IO basically. You know, it depends, you get some like interest payments, just you know, depends, depending on how long you can receive like this interest payments. But as we're saying here, what we talk about here, so all those in our market are in severe distress. Here I'm showing you, in a real quote on the ABX in the market, on October 29th, 2007, you can see, so far, we have like four series of ABX indices, and for each series, we have like five indices, with like initial rating giving as AAA, AA, single A, triple B flat, and triple B minus. And if you look at everything from price term, and very interesting, most people in this field, they only understand price, as if they are all in bonds. But even though I quoted the price here, in reality, there are a lot of really bond price, all right? Actually, they are still like a CDS in a spread. So when I put like this in a fiction in a spread here, meaning like if you buy protection with AAA bond, what you need to pay is to pay 18, basis points in a rounding based on the outstanding balance of your whole portfolio, and $100 minus that one as a percentage, which kind of like a 3-point something, upfront. So that's essentially what the price means here. All right. Even though I'm quoted in price, but there are a lot of actually like a bond price. But still, like I said, yes. So it's kind of like $100 minus like a price is your upfront payment in percentage, and the fixing rate is what you need to pay based on rounding as a percentage, as a basis points on outstanding balance. Alright, you can see that some of the 2007 bond almost like it priced like $20, and it's sometimes even less. We are observing it has reached at the bottom at $17. So this is essentially the current market. And here I give you a topic quote here. Before you said before I put bid ask spread, you can see meaningfully how much the bid ask spread is. Here I'm just put you low and high. Low and high are tremendously different. It's just the people don't want to trade. No one knows how to trade them. So people just put ridiculous high or low numbers for each of the tranche. Because they don't know how to trade. So mortgage loan is pretty interesting. Here is kind of I'm giving you a very simple classification about the mortgage loan. Mortgage loan, sometimes depends on how the interest rate is set. We could classify them into fixed or floating. And fixed loan basically is fixed for 25 or 30 years. The interest rate is fixed. Floating usually most of the time is something called ARM. You fix it for the first 2 or 3 years, then you have floating for the rest of your life. And 228 means the mortgage rate is fixed for 2 years, and then floating for the rest 80 years. There are some of the 327 or 525. And sometimes the mortgage also have something we call the first lien or second lien. So a lot of time you got a guy who has $5,000, he can go out and buy a house, say $500,000 house. So how could you do that? And you basically go to the bank and say, okay, I want to buy this house. And she said you don't have any income, don't have any documentation, but he has a few $1,000s, he can borrow 80% from one bank, then borrow another 20% from another bank. And so you basically have a combined loan to value ratio almost 100%, and a lot of times it's even more than 100%. And for bank, in the good timing perspective, a lot of banks they really want to lend the money out, because once I lend the money out, and I sell the loan to the bank to securitize, I don't care who take the money. And sometimes people go there to find the documents. Nowadays, they find that, wow, Winfrey Oprah actually has found a lot of papers. So you can see how much the fraudulent the whole process is. And what we call the signing in a second, the people don't even know, actually, he's 20% down payment is also borrowed from another bank. All right? So, and sometimes people give you something called a teaser rate. Meaning I give you a very low interest rate, 1% for the first 2 years, wonderful, even like a zero interest rate, you know, zero like the principal, just interest only. So most people can afford it. And but once the rate is reset after a certain time, that will become very high. So a lot of time if you see, we have like a beta, something called a margin or initial rate. Margin is a spread. You compare your like the rate before reset and after reset, the difference could be as high as like a 6, 7, even 8%. So that's essentially what we're talking about here. And, you know, of course, you know, there's a prepayment, you know, and sometimes they put some prepayment penalty here. A lot of like people got, you know, hooked into a situation and they can't prepay, you know, early. And currently, especially when market liquidity, you know, has dried out, no one would like to lend the money to you. So liquidity becomes so bad. And that's what we talk about here. Those are all descriptive of the stuff, you know. But you can see how complicated the problem is, right? A lot of, and this problem, I don't think any of the problems are created by quants in Wall Street. So you don't need a quant to figure out, you know, all the problems there. I think it's basically like a whole, you know, process that, you know, doesn't work very well, and the incentive is wrong. And so here I'll allow you to put in a quote by quote a scientific approach to a problem we have here. So what do we do? So what I'm showing you here is, like I said, let's just do like something I call a tabulation. And I pick up a mortgage loan portfolio, and suppose I pick up a loan, mortgage loan portfolio, this one probably is 2005, you know, all the mortgage loan, like a part of the mortgage loan, you know, issued in the first quarter of 2005. So then I keep, you know, tracking them month by month. And the total number, you know, at risk, that is my total number of mortgage loan. Here I don't even trace like a dollar term, I just trace like an individual mortgage by numbers. And some of them, you know, with a default. And I put them in 1,000, even like within first 1, 2, 3 months, you already observe some default. You probably, it's hard to believe. How could you, you know, borrow a house, like after 2 or 3 months, you cannot afford it? Right? You can see like yes, there are situations, you know, people cannot afford their house after 2 or 3 months. So you can see even after like 5 months, you can see almost like, you know, hundreds like, you know, defaults of this like a pool. And then like also you can count like a number of prepay. And the prepay, like in general, you know, it's pretty high. Why it's high? You know, especially in the decline interest rate environment situation. And usually, you know, you can always know to find someone else who can lend you cheaper, right? So without paying too much in a penalty. And then you just say, put the sum together. This is what I call the total number of decrement. Decrement meaning this loans are taken out from your pool. And then you can work out something called a marginal, you know, default rate, right? Just make a little bit of comments about this one. And I told you I don't know too much about a mortgage at all, but a mortgage has been a good business in Wall Street over the last, you know, 15 years. Most people, you know, deal with mortgage, mainly deal with agency mortgage. There's no default there. And a lot of time they use, you know, some, you know, existing technology such as, you know, Intex. And Intex is very interesting. Like a lot of information today, you get it from Intex. But Intex is just like, you know, a data holder. It doesn't have any analytics there. 10 years ago, I was trying to build, you know, a commercial software of CDOs. I tried to find a partner to team up with. I went to Intex office, a suburb in Boston. It's like a manufacturer in a warehouse. They put all the, you know, ABS, you know, mortgage, you know, back in security, like those prospectors in the office. That's all they do. They collect the data. Every month they get the data from trustees, put the data there. That's all they do. And I have nothing. You know, only thing I know is leave the model. So we spend a day together talking with each other. You know, I come back to report to the CEO of the company. I say, you know, wait a second here. They have everything except the model. I have nothing except the model. Then the CEO of my company was asking me, did you tell them how to do a model? I said, no. And I don't think they are analytics show, but many of the results of the firm is produced by Intex. But even though there's some fundamental basic number, you know, it's obvious it's a credit right. I'll give you like just one example. Suppose I ask you a question, say, you observe 100 people arriving at the beginning of the year. So I tell you, so 10% of them, die of accident. Right, I'm just using a hypothetical example. And 5% of them, die of, cancer. By end of, this rate are all, annual rate. By end of 1 year, how many people, left? Alive? What's your answer? So 10, 85. Very simple, right? So, you observe like 10 people, die of accident, and 5 people die of cancer. And index, that's not index answer. Index will tell you, actually, it's not a case. Index will apply, I'm translating the question into prepare a default now. So now I got a translated question, say, you got $100 in a loan portfolio. 10 of them would be prepaid. 5% of them would be, defaulted. How much money you left, after 1 year? So what the index does, index would say, I'm applying 10% to it first, I got $90. Then I multiply 5% to a remaining $90. Right? So at the end of the day, actually I got little bit higher than 85. So that's the thing how index is calculated. I was joking with people, I say, it's almost like you make assumptions, say, among the 10 people who die of, accident, if they don't die, they would also hit by, car. Right? So you probably feel this is a very simple, question, but when you look at all the numbers, this becomes important because when prepare, in general, it's historically pretty high. Default in general, historically very low. It doesn't matter how you calculate them. But now, when you get the prepare and the default all very high, more than 10%, how you calculate them become very important. So here I'm basically just tell you that from even the so-called scientific way, that's how you should look at a loan portfolio evolution, right? So prepare, default, then sum them together, that's called a total, decrement. And then the survival probability, is based on the total, 1 minus the total, the margin of, default or prepare rate. Very simple. Everything for each period should be based on the outstanding balance or outstanding loan at the beginning of a period. Not doing this convolution because you introduce some correlation between them. And depending on how you apply them, first or second, you create some not inconsistent results. Put a little bit of math here. So, and again, I say, what do you model here? I'm trying to model, I'm trying to rather consider the situation of a partial, prepay. All right. So I'm basically saying the fundamental variable here again is in a measure from the time mortgage is issued to time mortgage is terminated. Right. The mortgage could be terminated by two causes here, and the prepay or default. In reality, actually, you also have a scheduled repayment of principal. But for a 30-year mortgage in general, that's a very small percentage. All right? So here I'm just putting it draw them. So all you need to do here is just say, I need to specify the general distribution, of the status and the time until, some termination. So that's essentially the very actual science and mathematics, So here, that's how you should do everything, all right? So, okay, let's look at some historical data. And in practice, we spend a lot of time trying to compare one loan against another loan, one loan portfolio against another loan portfolio. It's so hard to compare. Here, I'm just trying to compare, different vintage years. So at the early days, people always ask and say, which vintage is worse than another vintage? And actually, this kind of problem is very easy to answer because the data, you have enough data. Actually, loan performance company has almost every mortgage issued in the United States. Every month, they provide you the updated information about the mortgage status, current 30-day, delinquent or 60-day delinquent. Here I'm just show you take a first quarter of 3 vintage years, show you the kind of this is more default rate here. All right? You can see very clearly default rate increases from 2004 to 2005 to 2006. So why this happened? This is just like a reflection of the, you know, where it lacks in the underwriting like a standard, right? So the whole question is like, you know, when you value a security, like if you value security, you know, today, most important thing is how would be this curve, you know, fluctuating in the future. So that's the most important part, right? So that's essentially what it'll show you some empirical data here. Let me see. In practice, like, there are a lot of people who are doing mortgage research for more than like, you know, a dozen years. And I interview many of them. I worked with the research department, you know, at Barclays Capital too. And very often I say, you know, how accurately you can predict, you know, prepay. People, the good one will say, I can predict the prepay within 3%. That's it, on the normal circumstances. And I say, what's the predicting error? And most time they show me there's no error. Now what do they do? What they do is they say, because there are so many samples here, usually they take like a big sample, divide them into two parts. Use one part of the loan to, you know, to train a model. Then like I say, look, I test, you know, my results against another part of the data. Works like almost like a perfect, you know. We spend like very little time trying to share this result. If you look at this result, you probably feel, wow, you did like some, you know, great model here. Like my, you know, fitted value and actual value are so close to each other, right? But that's another situation, you know, here. And what matters to me, I don't care how your model works, you know, on a universal, you know, pool. What I care is, you know, when I apply a model to a specific set of bonds underneath my, you know, ABS, you know, ABS bond, you know, to see how much error of that one is. Because at the end of the day, all my cash flow is depends on that, you know, cash flow for a specific, you know, 5,000, you know, loan pool. All right? So that means, like, when you do this kind of model, you have to be extremely careful. You know, for me, dealing with ABS deals, a lot of them need to know how the model works for against the universe of a bond, but also how bad, you know, it works against, like, a small, you know, sample. That's one. Second thing is, like, when you work with people who are running, like, a, you know, specific model, very often we don't consider too much about the actual economic environment. And I say, what kind of like data do you use? They actually use data like from, say, 2007 to 2007 year data. I say, wait a second here. Like, just like, you know, I came from a material science background. You know, as you know, Dan mentioned, I studied material science at the University of Waterloo. So if you are asked to estimate a mortality table, so how do you construct a table? So one way you can construct a table, say, I'm picking up, like I say, a lot of people to, you know, to wait until everyone dies, right? Then I can, you know, construct like a probability of default, right? But the problem is like understanding like that if you observe people over 100 years, the underlying fundamental economic, you know, environment has been changed, right? That doesn't work. And for example, like if you look at the prepay, I look at the prepay is always high. I say, wait a second here, like. If I look at like based on latest information, the prepay is like less than 10%. No one has money. You know, everyone wants to try to get out of this market. And there are more than like almost like 100 mortgage company, you know, has already gone bankrupted. So where do you get the money? So I think what we need to do actually, you just observe like a 1 month experience. And I can construct a whole CPR, CPR code. So how do I do that? It's very simple, right? When you observe like 1 month and of all the loans, some loan at 5 months old, some loan at 7 months old, I just look at like, you know, what's the percentage of there, I can construct my whole, you know, curve, right? I believe probably this like a second curve much more than your first curve. The first curve because like your experience is very much running like over the last 7 years. And actually if I do this like month by month, I can see like a distinctive shift of, you know, prepay, you know, reducing and default, you know, increasing. All right. So that's kind of like, you know, some just general comments about empirical, you know, data. And so what do I do about it? And I think that what do we need to do about it is like, you know, we try to create some like, you know, theoretical model to tackle this problem. So empirical side, that's all people wrong. to basically run some kind of a Cox regression model here. You basically say the default prepare like instantaneous rate is H here. Usually like we have like a, you know, something called a baseline prepare or default rate. What is baseline prepare default rate? It's kind of like a default or prepare rate for average load. Alright, so if you take all you know, X as average, then you know that exponential part become 1, so then you know you get like your hazard rate is going to equal the baseline. So that's basically like empirical studies. But in reality, when I do risk neutral pricing, you know, it's so hard for me to consider all the factors. We use like up to like 20 factors when we run empirical studies. But in reality, when I try to price some derivatives, what matters here, I'm not doing prediction. I'm not, base everything just on that, historical, observation or regression model. I'm actually say, based on current market traded price, what are people's anticipation about the future? It's not your view, it's not my view. It's market as a group, a greater upon view about what could happen in the future. So this is what I'm trying to do, try to risk neutralize an empirical model. So what I can do here is basically say I'm continuing to start with the prepared default, base curve, and I'm just trying to introduce some factor here. Certain factor impacts like a prepared only, some impacts on the default only. There are some common factor which could have an impact on both of them. That's an XM here, right? I can also choose some function form. And then I can very much based on what function form I choose, what parameter I use, and I can try to calibrate the market. Here I'm trying to mention a little bit about the valuation side, which is like a dramatically different in Wall Street, like even with respect to a single name pricing valuation. Here what I give you is like a one loss. This is a loss for a loan portfolio. And you can see here that A is the loan amount, R is the recovery, and that probability P with tau, that is the total survival probability, but H is the default rate, marginal default rate. So the total loss could be expressed in this expression here. When I introduce the hazard rate for prepared default, both of them are random variable or even process. When I take expectation of this guy, you can see clearly, even to value single, loan portfolio, I need to use like a volatility of prepare, and default, even like a correlation of them, right? So that's a very simple math. And if you price like, ABS bond, which is tranche security, those securities largely depends on those volatility and the correlation. All right, so this is very complicated valuation requirement. In reality, all ABS bonds are cash flow CDO structure, and there's no way I can value every ABS bond exactly. The only thing I can do is basically rely on index by putting like a prepared default curve assumption into the system, then get out of a cash flow. From each cash flow, then I try to price them. Here is just like give you like a one example here, this is like a one bond, and if I put a certain prepay and default the curve there, I would generate this much in cash flow. The cash flow can tell you over each month's period what is the outstanding balance, do you get a principal repay back, how much interest rate you get, and also do you have anything write down. And for a CDS contract, you also cover something called interest shortfall. And what is the interest shortfall? If you're high-yielding assets, usually those are risky assets, default first. A lot of time you don't generate enough interest to pay your trump side, so that one is covered. And also there's something called a cap and a shortfall. Cap shortfall mainly is caused by a rapid interest rate environment, and sometimes interest rate changes substantially, so you get a cap shortfall. So of course sometimes you get it back. And based on this kind of cash flow, then I can value this bond, because you got the cash flow, you can value them as a cash bond, you can value them as CDS, and a lot of time now that's the distress of, CDS, we quote the CDS by upfront and running, you can value them, right? That's essentially the valuation. You can do it for ABS bond, when you aggregate them, you can do it for index, right? Then you do like a tranche, you know, you aggregate, you know, all the, you know, cash flow, you can do it also for the, you know, topics or ABS and CDOs, right? So that's essentially the, you know, whole framework. If you look at this framework, is the underlying, you know, driving factor is prepared default, specified by, you know, dynamic computing and risk model, but the every evaluation is done based on cash flow perspective with a minimum, like, you know, assumption. Any other, you know, characteristics of the contract, either from the ABS bond side, such as, like, you know, the cleaning up call, or do you get, like, you know, some kind of, you know, step down or off step down, many of those stuff, you know, feature, you can incorporate it into this framework. That's essentially, I think, you know, cover, you know, my talk, and it's a very brief, you know, outline about, you know, what a quote by quote, the scientific way to look at this complicated problem. Now I'm more than happy to answer some questions.
Are there any questions?